curious about IP, trademark, patent buying and selling in Hong Kong and Asia? Then listen up. You're in for a treat today on Global from Asia, episode number 69.
Welcome to the Global from Asia podcast, where the daunting process of running an international business from Hong Kong is broken down into straight up actionable advice. And now, your host, Michael Michelini.
Thank you everybody for tuning in today. I'm really excited to be in your earbuds and some news that only parents might appreciate. But today my son Miles crawled for the first time. It's exciting, and I told some of my single friends and they don't seem to think it's such a big deal. But for those parents out there, you might know that feeling. And for those that maybe one day will be a parent, remember me when that happens. Okay, and now we have another 5-star review. Let's insert some applause here. Okay, and it's from R.L. Smith here in China, leaving a review titled Go-To Podcast for Biz in China. If you want to listen to that first show with Tian, it's episode number 20, so globalfromasia.com/episode20, where we talk about U.S. IP for international or Asia-based companies. And he says, Mike really knows his stuff, and this podcast is my go-to podcast for anything related to business in China, particularly import, export, and e-commerce, which are just topics most relevant to me. Having been in China a few years myself, I know Michael is really plugged into the entrepreneur scene in Shenzhen and Hong Kong and always ahead of the curve on what's happening there. So listen up and take notes, basically. 5 stars. Thanks, RL, and I appreciate that, and I'm so excited to get this kind of feedback. I'm going to keep cranking out these China-focused podcasts, too. Okay, and now for this week's episode, we have one I decided, like I said, I have a few pre-recorded interviews and I'm just deciding orders, and this one I decided to do this week, a Dynamite Circle member, Michael B. I won't say his last name because maybe he doesn't want to be mentioned, but here's his question. Hey Michael, Terry Lin recommended me to reach out to you since I'm looking for recommendations for a Hong Kong tax consultant who can help with IP valuations and sales from our Hong Kong company. Okay, and I'll take care of that today in this show. And thanks, Terry Lin, from the Build My Online Store podcast. You're a good friend, and I appreciate you referring me and also your mentions on Twitter and in the DC. You're everywhere, buddy. Thanks a lot. So I brought my buddy Tyan Patel, who's a patent lawyer in Washington, D.C., to be on the show. He's also a college friend of mine. He was on an earlier episode. And while he's not in Hong Kong, he is traveling to Asia more these days and focusing on helping Asia companies with IP, buying and selling. So he's going to cover this topic pretty well. Also, please remember that show notes are on the blog as always at globalfromasia.com/episode69. So let's listen in. Thank you everybody for tuning in to another Global from Asia podcast. We have with us Tyan Patel, who is a good friend of mine back from college and also an IP expert that we had on episode number 20, where he talked about U.S. intellectual property for overseas companies as well as basically anybody. And he's back today. So thanks for being here, Ty.
Sure. Thanks, Michael, for having me again.
Great. And we were talking a little bit before the show, and you're in the States now, but heading over to this part of the world soon, right? Going to India. Is it business, pleasure, or both? Or?
It's mainly for business. I've scheduled some meetings with law firms and also companies in the area who are looking to broaden their horizons and actually try to gain IP outside of India. And it's with India, it's a growing market, and I think people are becoming more IP savvy these days and understanding the power of intellectual property and its ability for monetization.
Great. So for those that didn't get a chance to hear episode 20, maybe you could just reintroduce yourself to our listeners.
Sure. Yeah. Well, my name is Tyan Patel. I'm an intellectual property attorney, primarily specializing in patents and trademarks. I work for a law firm in the United States called Baker Hostetler. We are one of the largest law firms in the United States. We have over 1,000 attorneys. We specialize in intellectual property, litigation, tax, employment. Those are our main fields. So if there's any questions you have relating to any of those fields, please feel free to contact me. But that's pretty much in a nutshell what I do. In terms of intellectual property, my expertise is in client counseling for both large and small clients looking to build their IP portfolios. I also assist with defending clients' portfolios before the United States Patent and Trademark Office, as well as in district court. I also help with transactional matters, and that is the monetization aspect of intellectual property, where I help clients develop and realize the monetary gain that they can obtain from acquiring intellectual property and then licensing it, or building intellectual property and then selling intellectual property they believe is not core to, you know, what they're trying to develop. So there's many ways to monetize with intellectual property.
Great. Cool. So yeah, I think that's our topic today. We were talking about it, and I think how to actually monetize IP as an asset to sell or license to buyers or other people such as infringers. So that sentence is a lot of stuff, right? So maybe first we talk about valuing IP, or how do you put a number to the intellectual property?
Sure. So intellectual property they are intangible assets. They're assets that you can't readily touch, like a car or a house. They relate to patents, trademarks, trade secrets, copyrights. These are the main aspects of intellectual property. Now, while you can't touch and feel this type of property, they do hold value. Just as if you were trying to sell your home, there's a particular value related to that tangible asset. A home's value would be based upon its location, the structure itself, and based on those two things, a value would be provided to it. The same is similar to intangible property, such as, for example, a patent. The way to value a patent, there's a couple metrics. You know, one is how important is that patent to the community at large? You know, is it in a field that is very hot, up and coming? If it's very hot and up and coming, there would be a lot of potential suitors in the market that would be interested in potentially purchasing the intellectual property. Assuming the intellectual property, in this case the patent, has broad claims and covers intellectual property in which that particular suitor would like to enter. So, you know, that is one factor that goes into the valuation process. Another factor would be, how broad the claims are, and in addition to a couple other metrics, which I would be happy to discuss further.
Sure. Let's take it. I mean, it's of course hard to cover in one show, but we try our best. So yeah, like a lot of our listeners are, you know, entrepreneurs or tech enthusiasts and mobile apps. Like I think you know some listeners. I do a lot of mobile apps now. So, you know, valuing IP, I think on our previous episode 20, we were also talking about, it's all basically what somebody else is willing to pay. And do you like structure selling IP? Is it so, like you mentioned houses or cars, is it something you get paid for at one time, or is it a transferring it? I know there's licenses. Maybe explain different ways of monetizing IP, if sure. That makes sense. Yeah.
No, that's perfect. I think you explained that perfectly. So when it in terms of monetizing IP, and in term of monetizing, we mean making money. There's different ways. You can build your own intellectual property, meaning you can file for patents, you can file for trademarks, you can gain those rights, and then there may be people in the same space that you're working in that are very interested, and they may ask to purchase
by via a sale of your asset, which is the patent or the trademark. So you could very well come to an agreement where you decide that based on your strategic business objective, it's more worthwhile to sell the intellectual property asset because of the amount of money you might be receiving upfront. That, again, it's all based on the particular business objective in mind. And on the other hand, if you determine that it's IP that you feel is licensable to someone, you could retain the right. So instead of selling the IP to someone else where you do not have the right anymore, it's like selling the house to someone, you're essentially renting that house out where you still own the house. That's kind of what a license would be. So you own the rights, but you provide licenses to other people in the field to operate, basically use your IP to do what they may want to do. There's also other types of licensing where you cross-license, where it's possible that you have intellectual property and someone else has intellectual property. And you find that it's more beneficial for the two of you, instead of blocking each other, to work with one another and say, well, you can use my IP and I'll use your IP. Now, licensing in terms for monetization is important here, because there's different ways to structure the licensing deal. If there's someone that's interested in just your IP, you could give them a license for a fixed duration of time. I'll give you an example on a patent. So let's say you have a patent, you have a granted patent, and generally the life of the patent is 20 years from filing. After obtaining the patent, there may be 15 years left in the life of the patent. You've targeted potential licensees for your particular patent, and they are willing to pay you, let's say, for example, $10,000 a year to use your patent. Well, you could say, I will give you a patent for a fixed period of time. Let's say it's 5 years at a price of $10,000 per year. That is doable. You could also structure it to be based on what the potential licensee may be selling. They might have, your potential licensee may have the means to manufacture a product. You may find more value in the product and gear your license to obtain a royalty on every, we'll call them widgets, that are sold. So perhaps you understand that the licensee has the ability to manufacture and sell hundreds of thousands of these widgets or products per year. You could ask for a royalty, a small lump sum, for each widget that's sold, let's say 2% or 5%. You know, all of this is relative, and this is done during the negotiation process.
Got it.
With the licensee.
Okay, great. I'm writing notes here. This is really amazing stuff. So I'm curious how many deals normally are straight out, you know, selling versus licensing. I feel like licensing probably is more complex and difficult than straight selling something.
That's true, because, you know, if you want to sell your IP, all you have to do is figure out a price and the consideration, which would be the patent, and the day that you want to sell it. So once it's sold, it's like selling a house. You know, you really only need a price, and if the buyer is agreeable to that price, then you have a sale.
Cool. Yeah. And do you have any, is there any numbers out there, like how many is licensed versus sold? Is there like a percent, or is there a more common? I think a lot of listeners, and even like me, we're small, medium-sized companies, and we're looking more for like common agreements that we can show to like a buyer or a seller as like a template or an example that's been done. I don't think so something that's kind of like a, what's more common or acceptable.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's something I could certainly assist with. But I think, you know, back to the question, you know, what is more commonplace? You know, it really depends on, the interests and the strategic business objectives of the particular company. So, you know, if it's a small company, the small company may need more cash up front, but, you know, in return, they're giving up their intellectual property. And so, you know, unless they have a lot of ideas in the pipeline, you know, that might not be the best course of action for them. Maybe the best course of action is to provide a license to a company. And maybe it's not an exclusive license. Maybe it's a non-exclusive license, which means that the company can get a, you know, some cash pursuant to the license from each of the non-exclusive licensees that the holder of the IP would like to enter into.
Got it. Yeah. So let's maybe dig a little bit. I know you were just discussing the different structures, such as yearly or maybe 5-year contract at a yearly payment at a fixed amount. But I think maybe there's also like this royalties that you mentioned as either a percent of sales or maybe as a fixed amount per unit if it's measurable. Mm-hmm. So, yes. So for example, I guess this is all about negotiation really, right? So you're just trying as either to buy or sell, you're just trying to maximize how much you can get. But I guess one example would be maybe it could be a mixture of fixed payments plus like a variable royalty of a percent of sales. I'm sure listeners are wondering, how does the seller or licensor know your sales, like on royalties? It's probably just audit access to the books or...
That is right. In the United States, you know, it would have clauses that say that, you know, the books would be provided to the licensor every either annually, it could be biannually, or it could even be quarterly. So because, you know, the payments perhaps, and then it's also, when do you want to be paid? Do you want to be paid annually? Would you rather be paid quarterly? So it's really structuring the deal, you know, to the best, to be the most appropriate for the parties involved.
Got it. So, you know, also this podcast is global or international, so it's always more complex, right? And you mentioned non-exclusive license. So would that be is that a territory type agreement, or could that just be, I know there's territorial like licenses, right? So for the US or for Canada or for Europe or a country or a state even, right? Is that, maybe you can give some more examples on non-exclusive?
Sure. So what a non-exclusive license is, first of all, is it's a license that allows the owner to continue to license the technology or the IP to other people. And that's why it's called non-exclusive. If you provided someone with an exclusive license, the licensor of the IP would not be able to then license the IP or the technology to someone else. But you can get an exclusive license, let's say, in a particular field. You know, let's say that the IP is, you know, let's take an example. For example,
I'm thinking, I don't know if this is valid, but maybe I could suggest, like, I've done a lot of bar products in, you know, previous business, and Corona is one famous brand, you know, and of course everybody knows Corona beer. So usually if you have a Corona logo on a t-shirt or a bottle opener, it'll sell more because people want to like the brand so much they want to buy it. So then there would be licensing shows in the U.S. I had never gone, but some of my colleagues or friends had gone. And you basically go to that brand owner and license their brand for you to have the ability to produce your product with their logo on it. Is this similar to what we're talking about here, or is this something different?
Well, no. I mean, so there's trademarks and there's also patents. What we're talking about here with the Corona example would be a trademark. And, you know, the company itself would, you know, have a good goods and services, right? So they've got rights in the particular goods and services for as long as they're using the goods and services, but you know, there are always potential licensing streams from the trademark as well, if there's somebody that they want to sell it to or license it to. So selling means, you know, giving away all right, title, and interest. If you're licensing it, they could license the logo to someone else in a particular market, assuming, because you have to remember that trademarks and IP is territorial per country. That's where the rights last. So within that country, though, you could say, I give this person rights to brand the Corona, you know, the Corona paraphernalia or t-shirts and logos in a specific market. You could do that. You can break it up into different markets, different regions. You could say that I give them the right to license these shirts, the logo on the shirts in only the Northeast or only the Southwest, something like that. And that's where they would be. That would be the extent of the license in that in that area. Now, if the licensee starts selling the logos outside of the field or the region, then they would be infringing the rights of the trademark because they're outside of the license.
So that helps. And so then I have another example for a patent. Years ago, I licensed a patent, and it was an upfront fee, which was half as a fee and half as a prepayment on royalties for a bar product. And then, it was quarterly payments based on sales. And then what got really complex, because it was a U.S. Patent with a New York company, and I was in Hong Kong, and then there was a buyer in Europe that was a distributor that wanted exclusivity in Europe. Mm-hmm. And so maybe I'm actually learning right now about non-exclusive. So I had an exclusive worldwide, I believe. I mean, I was like, as far as I understand. And then, but a lot of times the European company didn't see my name on the U.S. patent, so then they wanted to talk to the patent holder, but I said I had the exclusive. So could I then... I was also then writing him an exclusive in Europe. Is that legitimate, or am I getting myself in trouble here? Or, I mean, is that something people can do, is if they're licensing a patent and then they're getting... breaking it up to regions, you know, is that something... is this something possible?
Yeah, so, you know, as the licensor, as the owner of the IP, you have the ability to provide somebody an exclusive license or a non-exclusive license. Now, the person who receives the exclusive license, it all depends on the agreement. So if the agreement says that person is not allowed to non-assignable, non-transferable, if it says that, then the licensee, the exclusive licensee, would have no right to then further sublicense the IP to someone else. But if the agreement doesn't say non-transferable, non-assignable, then it is possible for an exclusive licensee to provide some of their rights to someone else based on the agreement. It all depends on the agreement.
Yep. And I've been learning from other people that normally – so I guess they call it a front load or a back – you know, a front end or the back end or the middle.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Can maybe just give some ideas what that is? I guess that's the payments, right, for the license?
Yeah, you know, because sometimes depending on sales and volume, you can front end – you can front load the payments – so that you get a bigger cash flow, a cash boost at the beginning. There's others where it's understandable that the technology is still being built and the sales may not be, you know, ramping up so fast, especially if you're selling a new product. So, you know, it might be backloaded, or, you know, not front loaded, but it'll be a staggered licensing deal. So a little bit at the beginning, then in a couple of years, and then a little bit more money will be provided, and then after that, even some additional money, so that at the end, you're still getting the money, it's just more at the end.
Okay, clear. And I guess, of course, it's all about negotiation, but I guess the buyer would always like to pay later, and the seller probably wants to get paid up front if possible, but is there any normal, like, agreement? Or I know, I think people want to, like, I guess everybody, like, when they're negotiating something, they would like to know, like, what's more acceptable.
Well, you know, if you're doing a front or a back end and it's not based entirely on, you know, sales volume, I would say, you know, it could even be a little bit every single year. So if there's 10 years in the license, every year you pay a fixed amount. So it doesn't have to be front loaded. That seems to be the most fair, depending on the but it also depends on the circumstances.
Cool. Thanks so much, Cyan, for all of this. And then maybe I'm kind of getting towards the end of my points here, but, you know, I think internationally, that's really complex, and it's hard because I guess every country, like, you know, a lot of this is about, you know, still revolves around US IP primarily, right? But, you know, we've talked in episode 20 about international IP, you know, filing first in the US with the 1 year ability to do a global patent. Mm-hmm. But,
yes,
I guess if I'm selling my IP, the transfer is the same as like a house, like the deed to a house or, you know, the deed to a car. And then any owner in any country would then just transfer through a lawyer would help do that, or first is a contract and then is the actual settlement, which would be the owner, the name on the actual patent or trademark would then change, right?
And so there's two things, right? Yeah, there's one is the agreement between party A and party B, which would be the, let's say it's the asset sale. And, you know, that could be the sale of the patent or the trademark. There's a secondary step, but that's only more for bona fide purchasers, you know, good faith bona fide purchasers for value. And that has to do with the recordation. And so it's always advisable once you obtain an asset to record it with, you know, with a state or federal registrar. So with patents, for example, once you obtain right to the patent, you could file an assignment, an assignment with the assignments branch of the patent office, and this is now free. So they used to charge money for that. And now a recordation of the assignment can be done for no money at all.
Wow, that's amazing. So, okay. And any other tips for listeners? I know, I hope some of them that are serious about doing something like this should reach out to you. But what steps should they go through, I guess? Of course, it depends if they're a buyer or a seller of IP, but well, let's say a seller. I mean, basically, they're shopping around their IP. They own some trademarks that they made. They would then just contact potential companies and say, "Or you know, maybe I'll just step back and just say, what's some steps somebody is interested in pursuing this? What should they start to do?"
Well, so the first step is to build your IP, obtain, you know, if it's a patent, obtain broad coverage on your specific technology. Once you obtain something of value, it's important to, you can test the waters as a client, or you can test the waters yourself. You could, you know, call up a couple companies and see if they are actually interested. And these got to be companies in the same space that you're working in. What I would be able to help with is, in fact, determining the value of the IP by seeing how broad are those claims. And I can also assist with finding buyers for the IP. So in the US market or worldwide, we can also help with finding, you know, if you're looking to acquire IP, So instead of you trying to sell IP, we can also assist with that based on your specific technology and where you're working in.
Got it. Great. So how can people reach out? I mean, website, email, or LinkedIn. And if you want to list it here, I can also link it up on our show notes. But
that would be fantastic, Michael, if you could provide, you know, the listeners with my LinkedIn information as well as, you know, my email address, which is tpatel@bakerlaw.com. Or feel free to give me a call. Happy to speak. Sometimes email is best, especially with the time differences.
Yeah.
And then we can and we can always find a convenient time to speak.
Okay, great. On the phone. Thanks so much, Tyann, and have a great trip to Asia and India.
Great. Thanks so much, Mike, and it was a pleasure to be back on the show.
Yeah, get you back again. Thank you, Tyann. I learned a bit there. Show notes is always on the blog at globalformasia.com/episode69. Check it out. Don't be shy also to leave a comment there with your feedback. Did we cover everything? Did it clarify some questions? And I hope, Michael B., you got your information. So now for some fun stuff I like to put. I'm going to have a photo on the show notes. I met the listener, Colin, who shot me that email for a beer in Hong Kong while he was in town. He was at a trade show for baby toys, and we met up at TST Delaney's and got a funny photo with also the owner of the pub was in there, so it's three of us if you want to see that on the site. And he also brought me some baby toys for my kid Miles, which is really, really cool. So thanks again for that. I've been just getting lots of emails and messages, so I'm going to read off another one from Eddie Freeman in New York City, who says, "Hey Michael, I just read a nice write-up about you from December NJ Biz Magazine. Growing up in a family business, I appreciate the risks you took to pursue the life you wanted. I would love to meet you for coffee when you're back in town. Congrats and keep it up, Eddie Freeman." So thank you, fan. I really like that. And sure, I mean, in life, we just got to try to do what we feel is right and what we are passionate about. So I hope everybody, I mean, if I can inspire somebody, that'd be amazing. I mean, I hope we all live the life we want to live. And I'm excited to just keep going with these shows in 2015. I've gotten more and more feedback, and I'm going to try to just keep it short with feedback today. Just one of those weeks where it's got a lot of cool messages. And also, listeners in China, I know this site, the website's sometimes blocked or slow in China, and iTunes doesn't work so well. So we've been working on a WeChat page, public page, so that you can subscribe there, and the podcasts will be hosted in Chinese servers, so you can download or stream them faster, or anybody else that prefers WeChat. Stay tuned for an official announcement, but you can probably search in WeChat and find it. So that's it for this weekend. See you guys soon. Bye-bye.
To get more info about running an international business via Hong Kong, please visit our website at www.globalfromasia.com. That's www.globalfromasia.com. Also, be sure to subscribe to our iTunes feed. Thanks for tuning in.